From WIPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. High-frequency buses, dedicated bus lanes, new routes. Baltimore Link launched last June, a $135 million reboot of the city's transit system. What is ridership like? Are buses running on time? Kevin Quinn, head of the Maryland Transit Administration, says things are moving in the right direction.
We've invested in transfer facilities. We've purchased additional buses. We've hired new drivers. I think that we have made some pretty significant investments. You know, there was an idea that this bus system just needed band-aids and sort of smaller improvements and tweaks to make it better. And what we really found was that it didn't. It needed to be overhauled.
And transit activist and blogger Danielle Sweeney describes her work tracking no-show buses and fostering rider feedback. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Last June, the Maryland Transit Administration launched Baltimore Link, an overhaul of the city's transit system, with features such as dedicated bus lanes, signals that keep traffic lights green when a bus is approaching, and a network of high-frequency buses called CityLink. The price tag was $135 million. The plan came after Governor Hogan canceled the plan to build a Red Line light rail. Baltimore Link, the governor said, signified the state's commitment to the city and was designed to transport residents of the city and surrounding counties to work. At the time, Baltimore Mayor Rawlings Blake criticized the bus design as failing to spur east-west economic development. And County Executive Kevin Kamenetz called Baltimore Link, quote, window dressing, end quote. 8 months later, we've asked the head of MDOT-MTA, the Maryland Department of Transportation, Maryland Transit Administration, Kevin Quinn, to tell us how he thinks things are going. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks.
Also with us is transit activist Danielle Sweeney, a former writer for the Baltimore Brew. She blogs about Baltimore's buses on Medium.
Hi, happy to be here.
Kevin Quinn, in addition to Baltimore Link's launch 8 months ago, there was basically a second launch in September when kids in Baltimore went back to school. How are things going?
Things are going really well. We've seen some great increases in reliability. We had that second launch when school started in September. That was really important for us. You know, we've got 28,000 school kids a day that ride MTA services. And so we did a lot of outreach to the kids. They got out there, out on the system just fine and really learned the system pretty well. Things have been going well. Again, increases in reliability, some great performance so far.
Tell me about the increases in reliability. How do you measure that?
Sure. So we measure reliability in two ways. One is our high-frequency CityLink routes that you mentioned. We really try to keep buses evenly spaced. It's about them being evenly spaced. So a traditional on-time performance for a bus route is, you know, does it arrive at a specific spot at a specific time? Those CityLink routes, our goal is if it says it's going to come every 10 minutes, did it come every 10 minutes? And so we look at that. And so our CityLink buses are hitting those headways 77% of the time. And so that's pretty good. We're happy with that, and we're going to keep pushing to get that even higher. We have a goal of 80%.
When they're out of whack, how far out of whack are they? Do you measure that too?
Yeah, so we do look at bus bunching as well as bus gapping. So bus bunching, a lot of people, you know, a lot of your listeners have seen before. It's two buses, you know, following each other going up the street. We also look at bus gapping. You know, is there a significant gap between the buses? And sometimes we can do things like insert strategic spares, strategic buses in the middle of that, so it's not such a big gap. So in other words, a rider that's expecting to wait 10 minutes isn't waiting 30 minutes, that they're waiting 15 minutes because we can insert a bus. So we really do try to take a very close look to be sure that buses are well spaced.
How are ridership levels compared to before Baltimore Link launched?
Yeah. Our ridership is down. I would say that really follows national trends. And so, you know, nationally, ridership on just about every major system is down 6 to 8%. We're trending down. The good news is that our projections for December are showing us matching the December numbers for 2016 and 2017. So I think we're going in the right direction. I'll also just put out there that a goal of Baltimore Link, we didn't have a goal to increase ridership. The goal was improve reliability. That we've had a bus system that for decades people haven't been able to count on. And so as part of Governor Hogan's initiative to create a more reliable system, our mantra has really been, if you build it, they will come. If you provide a reliable system that people can really count on, ridership will naturally go up.
And you think you're starting to see that?
Yeah, I do. You know, at the recent subcommittee hearing in Annapolis, you know, we when we compare fall of 2016 to fall of 2017, we've gone up from 62% up to 67, almost 68%. And, you know, what I would argue is that it took us 50 years to get to 62%, and it took us 5 months to get to 67. And so I think we're seeing great progress. And with a service change that we've just had, I think we're going to see that number increase even more.
I want to ask you more about that in a minute. But Danielle Swinney, you have been following transportation issues in Baltimore for years. You've written several pieces about the performance of Baltimore Link for the site Medium. What do you make of Baltimore Link?
I think Baltimore Link is kind of a mixed bag at this point. I mostly keep track of the buses. I think some of the high-frequency routes perform well, like the silver route, but I think overall reliability is kind of spotty. And so from a rider's perspective, it doesn't always feel like the buses are coming every 10 minutes.
And what are you hearing from other riders?
I think there are certain routes that are like, you know, more problematic than others. I think the CityLink Blue, the east-west route, still has some issues. The CityLink Red and Green had some problems during the first few months, and I think some of the winter service changes may help improve those.
You've each mentioned service changes, so why don't you tell me what those are?
Sure. So MTA, at MTA, we change our routes, our services, three times a year, and this is done per our collective bargaining agreement with our union with our operators. And so we have service changes in February, in June, right after school lets out, and in September, right as school begins again. So three times a year, we make adjustments and changes and change schedules. So it just so happens that on Sunday, February 4th, was one of our main service changes. And so we did some really exciting stuff. We were rolling out a new route to Sparrows Point that we're very excited about, the Local Link 63. And we made a series of other runtime adjustments and changes to the system based on some of the data that we have to really have a more reliable system and fix issues that riders have been alerting us to.
But you also cut some routes, correct?
That's right. So we took a look at three of our three worst performing routes were the 102, the 106, and 107. And as we looked at our ranking for our system, these are express routes. One was between White Marsh and Towson, Towson to Owings Mills, and one from the Old Court Metro down to BWI. And out of our 67 routes, those ranked 65th, 66th, and 67th of all of our routes. So, you know, for example, the cost per passenger for those routes was anywhere from $15 to $22 per passenger to carry them on that route. And so as part of using resources wisely, we did eliminate those routes.
And Danielle Swinney, what's your reaction to those changes?
I thought those were good changes. They were expensive to run and underutilized. So it was maybe $23 to transport one passenger, and you may have had 10 people on the bus or something like that.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Kevin Quinn, head of MDOT-MTA, and transit activist and writer Danielle Swinney about the city's revamped transit system, Baltimore Link. I want to get back just quickly to this bunching question. When buses are following each other very closely, can drivers communicate with each other to space things out?
So we don't have drivers communicate with each other. We want them very focused on the road and focused on, you know, their route. A lot of times what we do is we have street supervisors out there that can communicate with drivers. So we have, you know, managers that are out on the street that are helping to manage service, and they can alert a bus to the fact that, hey, you're too close, or at a terminus, they can have buses leave at even times. So if a bus needs to get back on schedule, we can use supervision to get the bus back on a schedule where it has an even headway. Our operations control center can also alert a driver to where they are in relation to another bus to try to get some distance between the bus or to close a gap. So we have a variety of techniques that we use to really tackle that bus bunching problem.
Danielle, you have done research on how many times buses simply don't show up. Tell us about that.
I filed a Public Information Act request with the MTA to get their cut run data.
And cut run.
A cut run is a portion of a bus operator's work. Think of it as 3 or 4 hours of service.
And so does the cut refer to that service not happening? It's what
canceled?
Most of us, I think, would call a no-show.
Something like that. It's canceled.
And what did you learn?
In the past, well, I guess it would be June 18th through November, MTA cut more than 2,000 runs, primarily because of lack of operators.
No drivers?
No drivers, yeah.
So that leaves people waiting at bus stops when a bus isn't coming.
Yes.
Until the next bus comes. That sounds like a lot. A lot of people stranded at bus stops.
Sure. So to put it in context, that represents right around 1% of our total service. So over that period of time and the analysis that we, the data that we provided, it represents 1% of our service. Now, granted, that number should be zero, and our goal is certainly for that to be zero. One issue that we're really tackling head-on is our operator absenteeism and issues with operators at work. And so we're doing a variety of things from changing policies, changing management procedures, some communications procedures that we have to be sure that operators are leaving on time, that they're showing up for work when they need to show up for work, so that we can have zero cut runs
in
total.
I mean, have you looked into, is this somebody's homesick coughing her head off? Is this somebody's alarm clock didn't go off? I mean, what tend to be the reasons?
So I'd say it's a few things. So one is just looking at how we approve and how things like FMLA are used among our operators.
Family and Medical Leave Act.
That's correct. Workers' compensation as well as sick leave, and being sure that there's proper documentation from everyone on this.
Do you have a core of bus drivers who are waiting to be substitutes if somebody calls in at the last minute sick?
We do. We do have several operators that work either before run or after their normal shift. And so we use those operators regularly in an overtime capacity to meet when we have someone that doesn't show up.
Danielle, I want to make sure that listeners picked up on, you said you had to file a Freedom of Information Act request for this information. I mean, there's statistics about buses being late, but missing buses aren't part of that?
MTA doesn't publish its cut run data. I'm not sure that many transit agencies do, but in the course of talking with riders on my Facebook group, it would come up that the bus didn't show up and the run was cut. There was a no-show. And I wanted to find out just how often this happened. And so that's why I PIA'd it.
So, Kevin Quinn, buses not showing up is not part of the buses being late data that you collect. Why?
We collect it separately. As we look at cut runs, in a way we haven't looked at how to mingle those with on-time performance data. So we want to be sure that the on-time performance really looks at how frequently buses performed. I certainly agree that cuts are something that we need to take a look at, and it's certainly something that we're very focused on as we're looking to get that number down to 0%.
But as some of the delegates pointed out in the hearing that you mentioned, it's more of a trouble for a bus rider.
Sure.
If a bus just doesn't show, then if a bus is 5 or 10 minutes late, because that next bus, when it finally comes, is going to be so crowded.
I would agree. And so perhaps it's another data set. Perhaps there's a way to include it in our on-time performance data, and certainly open to having that discussion.
Danielle, you took a class with the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance on transit activism, and out of that you've developed some projects, including a Facebook page. I think you mentioned Facebook. It's called Where's the Bus, Baltimore? Tell us about this page.
Yes. Well, I took the class with the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance about 6 months ago. The class is called Transit 101. It runs for about 2 months, and they're having their third cohort begin the class in March. Everyone who's in the class has a student project, and my student project was threefold. The first was establishing the Facebook group. because I didn't think MTA had a public-facing, you know, feedback mechanism for Baltimore Link. So if people wanted to talk about it or complain or, you know, praise MTA or whatever, there was no way for them to do this in a public, you know, forum. And so I created the Facebook group for that purpose. And then I also went out to the bus stops myself about 55 times after Baltimore Link launched. I tracked the performance of the CityLink high-frequency buses to see if they were, you know, maintaining their headways, if they were showing up on time. And that was sort of preliminary.
So that project was two elements. You said there were three.
Yes. Currently, I'm crowdfunding a citizens' data collection project where
And that's going to be called Better Bus Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of data?
I will have, hopefully, with a few volunteers, we will go out on all the major bus routes and track their performance morning, mid-afternoon, and evening.
And what will that tell you that you don't think you're getting from your Facebook group?
Well, it will tell us exactly how well the buses are doing. It won't be, you know, just data from the MTA. It will be based on real experience.
Kevin Quinn, what is your reaction to Danielle's sense that you aren't getting that much rider feedback?
Yeah. So we welcome all rider feedback, right? So as part of the Baltimore Link process, outreach and feedback is a critical part of what we do. And so I welcome all the feedback we get. You know, I think we've also recognized that we haven't had the best customer feedback mechanism. So in January, we launched rateyourride.org, where customers can rate their ride on a 5-star criteria for the route that they're on. We're also really excited about rolling out real-time for our buses, where riders can look on their cell phone and look at an app and see when that bus is going to show up. And that technology that we're in the process of installing on buses is also going to give us a tremendous amount of new data that we just, frankly, haven't had before.
And that happens when?
So we're looking to roll that out in the spring. We received approval from the Board of Public Works in January for that, and we're going to be installing those GPS units on the buses. And we'll be able to roll that out in the spring. And that provides great new granular level data for all of our routes that we are so excited to dive into. I'll also just say that in the summer, we're also excited to be rolling out mobile ticketing across all of our modes as well. So being able to buy your bus or your train ticket on your cell phone for bus, light rail, metro, MARC, and commuter bus. It's a visual display that you can visually show to an operator or a conductor, and that will also give us some really great data.
Okay, we need to take a short break here. I'm speaking with MDOT MTA Administrator Kevin Quinn and transit activist and writer Danielle Sweeney about Baltimore Link, Baltimore's overhauled transit system that launched last summer. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
We'll have a little conversation about public transportation. About public transportation. I'm gonna have a little conversation about public transportation.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member support at 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. One out of three households in Baltimore does not own a car, according to census data. Without cars, getting to work can be a stressful and drawn-out experience. The Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance estimates that two-thirds of city residents commute to work outside the city. 8 months ago, the Maryland Department of Transportation, Maryland Transit Administration, rolled out Baltimore Link, a system of local and high-frequency buses interconnected to the city's light rail, train, and metro systems. MDOT MTA Administrator Kevin Quinn is with us this morning. So is transit activist and writer Danielle Sweeney. Let me pick up on that idea. We've been talking about buses, but how has Baltimore Link affected people's access to Amtrak, MARC trains, metro?
Yeah, that was really one of the guiding principles that we had behind Baltimore Link, this idea that we had bus routes that had been in place for 50, 60 years that had never quite been realigned to connect better with the MARC train, our metro system, or our light rail system. And so what we found as we really dove into it was that you had many lines going into a single metro station, but the next metro station maybe only had one bus line going to it or none at all. And so some were very well served, some weren't served at all. So we really looked to even out and provide that access, you know, whether it was to Penn Station, the West Baltimore MARC station. It now is a great multimodal connection where we built a new $7.5 million transfer facility at West Baltimore that connects our MARC train and our bus riders much better than it ever did before. And so those connections are really being made. And so I think that that ties into those operating improvements tie into some of the capital improvements that we made as well. So new real-time signage at Penn Station and at West Baltimore, transit signal priority, things like dedicated lanes, other infrastructure that we've really put in here in the city that tie all these pieces together.
Danielle, one of your biggest criticisms is that while Baltimore Link has been branded a total overhaul, you say it doesn't go far enough. In your view, what more is needed?
Personally, I would like to see greater reliability overall, particularly with the local links, the numbered buses. They run anywhere from, I guess, every half hour to every hour, and they make up about 45% of the system. Also, I would like to see some express CityLink buses because the CityLink routes are still kind of long. I think that would make a big difference.
Cutting the length of routes was one of your major principles, right, in planning the new system?
It certainly was, and we did that pretty significantly. It's not to say that we don't still have some long routes, but the very long routes are gone.
The price tag that I read attached to Baltimore Link was $135 million, which sounds like a lot of dollars, but it's really like 1% to 3% a year over 5 years. I mean, is it enough money to do the kind of overhaul that it's been advertised? Danielle, let me ask you that first before I let Kevin Quinn respond.
It doesn't seem like it to me. No.
What do you think would be really called for?
I think a 1% or 2% increase in your budget every year is not enough to, you know, provide the transformational transit that Governor Hogan promised.
And you would say to that?
I would say to that we've made some historic investments in transit and in this bus system that have never before been seen in this city. So, you know, regardless of the dollar amount, I mean, so we spent $6 million on 5.5 miles of dedicated bus lanes that did not previously exist in this city before Baltimore Link. Those red dedicated lanes where we've quite literally rolled out the red carpet for our buses didn't exist before. And that's a historic investment that most other cities, you know, had made a decade ago. We've got transit signal priority where we've installed sensors on a third of the fleet, and we're moving towards installing them on the whole fleet so that they are connecting with traffic signals. We've invested in transfer facilities. We've purchased additional buses. We've hired new drivers. I think that we have made some pretty significant investments. Maybe one of the most important things, though, is that, you know, there was an idea that this bus system just needed Band-Aids and sort of smaller improvements and tweaks to make it better. And what we really found was that it didn't. It needed to be overhauled. So what we've really done is we've laid a foundation that we can build on. These types of routes, those very long routes, you can't do anything with them. We have built a foundational system that we can now build on for success. That was not the system that we had before. We had a failing system before. We now have one we can grow from.
And I listened to that, and I remember that you told us several minutes ago, though, that the trend is down, that you're happy that you're sort of staying even. And I gather this is competition from Uber and Lyft primarily that you're looking at?
So ride sharing like Uber and Lyft, ridership often also trends with gas prices. And so cheaper gas prices, you know, the best ridership that transit ever had was when gas was $4 a gallon. And so, I think what we're really excited about are the reliability improvements. Again, if you provide a reliable system, people will ride it.
Where do you see things heading, Danielle?
I think with 67% on-time performance with the local links. I think they have a long way to go. Their goal is 80. As for the city link routes, they're averaging 77% headway, you know, being within their headway windows. That's an average. I would like to see the numbers for all the city link routes. I'm sure some are doing better than others.
We'll have to ask you both back to see how things are going in another 8 months.
Sure.
I appreciate your taking the time for this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Kevin Quinn heads the MTA, Maryland Transit Administration, part of the State Department of Transportation. Transit activist Danielle Sweeney blogs about Baltimore's buses at the site Medium. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we'll link to MTA information about service changes and to Danielle Sweeney's crowdfunding project, Better Bus Baltimore. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.